Welcome to Upfront Presidents. I'm Matt DeFrance of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, joined by Nathan Mills, also of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. And Nathan, the Blues are back in the win column after last night's 3-0 win over Carolina, snapped a 3-game losing streak. Really a needed win, needed result for them last night.
Yeah, when you said the Blues are back for a second, I thought you were going to stop there. And I was like, oh, Matt, pump the brakes. Hang on a second. Yeah. But it was a really nice win. I mean, you know, you had it was almost poetic. You had a quote from Montgomery in your story previewing the game where he says, you know, this is one of the best offensive teams I've seen out of Carolina. Lots of shooting, lots of pressure. And then here comes Hofer with his NHL league leading fourth shutout. First time they've been shut out all year. Great win.
Yeah, and there is a lot to like about it. I mean, obviously, who they beat is number one. This is, I think they entered the game with the best points percentage in the Eastern Conference. So that's a really good team. Obviously, they're on the second night of a back-to-back, so that matters too, right? They weren't catching them at their freshest. They did play in overtime the night before in Detroit, so plus the travel. So it does come with a little bit of a schedule advantage there. But the fact is that they still went out and they still turned in probably their best second period of the year, where they outscored them 3-0. And that's been the worst period in the NHL. Like, you took it all 32 teams, all three periods, 96 different periods. The Blues second period was the worst one in the entire league. They were outscored by 25 goals entering last night, and they go out there and they're plus three. First time all year, they're plus three in the second period. So really good win, and comes on the heel of the Blues Hall of Fame inductions the night before.
Maybe that was what inspired him, you know, getting to see some of the legends around, getting to see Kelly Chase, getting to see those guys going, hey, we, you know, let's turn it around for those guys. That's the story. I'm just trying to feel good about myself.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that was a big talking point after the game. I mean, it was a talking point before and after, I guess. Jim Montgomery said about 15 of the players went to the ceremony, and it was when Barrett Jackman, Alexander Steen, and Al Arbor were inducted into the Hall of Fame, and Kelly Chase was given the True Blue Award for all of what he's done for the organization as a player, broadcaster, alumni, ambassador, philanthropist, really all the different hats that Kelly Chase has.
Just all-around good guy, yeah.
Right, yeah, and so there was a lot of celebrating of the franchise one night before, and it is a pretty unique thing that the Blues have. It is a pretty active and proud alumni base that is in St. Louis. I've covered three teams now. The Panthers had some people that stuck around, probably mostly because it was South Florida. Dallas didn't really have many people stick around at all. And if they did, it wasn't an alumni group. And here right. in St. Louis, you know, the alumni, they have a locker room at Centene. You know, they go over there, they have a dressing room there. They have a suite at Enterprise Center. They treat these guys like these guys are still part of the organization. And it's something that a lot of organizations don't have. And I'm sure the players looking at that, you know, some of them probably saying, hey, this is pretty cool. I want to be part of this.
Well, I think that it's a culture thing, but I think it, you know, you talk about these guys being around and other teams not having that, you know, it's, in a sense, these guys are still part of the team. You know, I mean, they're around helping out, they're around offering advice, they're at these Hall of Fame events, they're always you know, supporting the team. And like, I'll give you just a small example. One of my favorite things that the Blues do on social media is like these interviews and profiles with former players. They've been going through a series right now with Cam Jansen that's fantastic. I've really loved it. And so, you know, that's not just shining a light on those players. That's those players shining a light back on the organization through social media. And I really love those. And, you know, the Blues having that kind of culture, I think, is one of the things that, like, when you kind of get down about maybe with the way a season like this has gone, you can go, okay, it's not all bad, you know? And I think this week got to show that in a big way.
Yeah. And that's a positive from this season, right? Just when they do get to celebrate a weekend or a week like this, and they come home from a really tough road trip, they go 0-3 in Chicago, Utah, and Vegas, They come home, they're looking for a little bit of a boost against one of the best teams in the league. They find it. And you know what? The way that they found it is probably noteworthy as well. Shorthanded goal by Nick Bjugstad, even strength goal by Dalibor Dvorsky, power play goal by Jimmy Snuggerud. You know, two of those guys are part of the future in St. Louis. No offense to Nick Bjugstad. Sure. But Dvorsky and Snuggerud are those guys that the organization hopes becomes the next wave, becomes in 20 years, you're going to see them sitting at a banquet and having their discussions with former teammates about the good old days, right? So I mean, feel like that's noteworthy. And Nathan, I got a hot stat for you. Ready?
Oh, you know I love hot stats.
All right. So the Blues scoring a power play goal, a shorthanded goal, and an even strength goal.
Oh, boy.
They have won 41 straight of those types of games.
We just need more of those games.
41 of them.
We need more.
Yeah, I mean, just score a shorty and a power play goal and an even strength goal every game.
I mean, listen, if it's 100% wins over the last 41 games, that's a really nice point percentage is all I'm saying. Just do it every night. You're good to go.
That's it. So they have not lost one of those games since February 18 of 2009. So pretty good, I would say.
Yeah, that's a really nice period, and happening in the second, as you alluded to earlier, felt good.
Yeah, and so, you know, Nick Bjugstad returns to the lineup after missing 15 games with an officially an upper body injury, but it's believed to be a head injury. He's wearing a tinted visor, and when he returned to practice, he wore a tinted visor last night in the game, and you know, he took a hard hit up high from Nikita Zadorov back in December that kept him out. So he's back. He gets back in the lineup, scores shorthanded, pitching a corner far side. Really, really good for Nick Bjugstad to do that. The Dvorsky goal might have been the prettiest one of the season in terms of just pure teamwork and passing and puck movement and fluidity. It was really fun to watch that one.
It felt like, you know, we've not talked a lot about it, but I've wondered if some of the youth, the injection of youth we've seen over the last, not just this season, but late last season as well, if there was some chemistry issues. And that was one of the first times I went, oh, okay, here it goes. And, you know, it's just one play. It's just one goal. But you could kind of see that glimmer of what things might be able to be as more of that youth gets involved and gets up to speed and all that. So I think that was one of the things I had written down was the Dvorsky goal. Like it's even strength. And so maybe it doesn't on the stat sheet get as much play as either of the special teams goals, but man, it looked nice. I loved that.
Yeah. And you know, it starts with Kyrou in his own ends, breaking up a play. And then really I feel like of the three passes that happened right before the goal, Kyrou's pass to Tyler Tucker was the one that was the most important one. It, you know, he kind of throws it into an area for Tucker to skate into. It's cross ice. It opens up a ton of room for that side of the ice for Tucker to find neighbors to find Dvorsky. Like it's a play that Kyrou starts and he kind of makes a pivotal pass and he doesn't end up getting a point on the goal.
Yeah.
But it is something that, you know, there's been a lot of times this season where he's been quiet, you know, where he hasn't shown up on the score sheet. He hasn't really even flashed the prime chances that you'd be looking to see from him, even if he does not score. You know, for a scorer like him, you say, all right, well, he might go through some dry spells, but at least he's getting chances. And you haven't seen a ton of that recently. You haven't come out of game saying, man, that Jordan Kyrou had five chances, but he didn't score and has come in and he's really snake bitten right now. You haven't felt that. And you know, even against Carolina, he had, you know, some turnovers that you're still shaking your head about. But for him to have that sort of play was encouraging. You know, still a long way to go for him to be as productive as he's been in the past and as effective as he's been in the past. Like that's still a work in progress right now for him. But that one play, positive to see from that angle.
I think you said it well, work in progress. He has taken some criticism this season from various directions, you know, Twitter us, you know, for kind of, you know, he's a guy who's
coaching staff.
Yeah, his coaching staff. I mean, yeah, he's taken a lot of heat this season for being a guy who scores, and when he's not scoring, doesn't show up in a lot of other ways. So it has been nice to see him start to do that. You know, I don't know if it kind of feels like if the season doesn't turn around, I don't know where that ends up. But it was nice to see that you know, him showing up in other facets of the game other than scoring.
Yeah, and then you know, Jimmy Snuderud finds some space on a rush, on man rush on the power play. And it looked kind of similar to the goal that the Blues scored in Vegas. Jake Neighbors scores a power play goal. Both of the rushes, the Neighbors goal and the Snuderud goal, came after a shorthanded chance the other way. You know, the Vegas and Carolina pushed so far one way that it led to you know, a chance the other way for the Blues, and that's how they scored their two most recent power play goals. And you know, Jimmy Snuderud obviously missed some time because of his wrist surgery, and that was a snipe from him. So good news on that front. And then with Joel Hofer, you know, you mentioned it earlier, four shutouts, tied for the lead in shutouts, and he's now, I think, the first goalie for the Blues to have four shutouts in a season since Jordan Bennington in 18-19. And we all know that wasn't even a full season from him. He kind of put that together.
You know, I know it's terrible. In my brain, you said 18-19, and I went back to, like, you know, the early 1800s. And I was like, wow, it's been that long? And so it took – I'm glad that you finished the rest of that sentence. You know, I looked at, before we started this, Hofer's numbers since Thanksgiving, because I wanted to see. I thought last night he might have gotten under two goals against average since Thanksgiving, but not quite. He's at 2.07, and that's pretty darn good. You know, we had talked recently about it feeling like a kind of a 1A, 1B situation with he and Bennington in either direction, depending on at what point of the season we were in. It is starting to feel less like that.
In what way?
I mean, the play, Hofer's play is pulling away to a point that we've talked about, and Montgomery's talked about kind of riding the hot hand. You know, we've talked about a changing of the guard. It feels like that is here.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we're at a similar spot than when we talked about last time. I think when we last recorded, it was after that Colorado game. And you know, since then, Bennington had the shutout against Montreal. He has that game in Chicago where tried to pull him. Joel Hofer wasn't ready, and so Bennington has to stay in and eat it. You know,
I love the narrative that he just didn't want to go in, and Bennington didn't want to come out. So there's this whole, like, did you see that on social media?
Yeah,
like the idea that crazy.
Yeah, it's just the TV shot of
him
poking his head around the corner doesn't really do him any favors.
No, it doesn't, but it was very funny.
Yeah, it was funny. I do think that, you know, Hofer is the better goalie this year, and they've used him as such. But I don't feel like it's a foregone conclusion, right? I mean, we were just a week ago, basically, that Bennington started two games in a row. It was that Montreal and the Chicago game. He started both of those. You know, obviously, one went really well, one went really poorly. But I don't feel like we're that far. But I think you are right.
He is obviously the better option. The Blues don't feel like we're that far. I mean, I think they agree with you. But like, I've seen enough. You know, like it feels like every time I said last time, I watched the Stranger Things finale instead of the Blues, right? But like, it seems like every time I turn on a game and Bennington's in goal, or I check my phone and there's a score and it's 4-0, like I know who's in goal. You know, if it's 4-0 the other way, I know who's in goal. Like, yeah, there was the game last week, but it's not been that way all season. Maybe we get to the Olympics. Maybe Bennington, you know, he's a guy who rises to the challenge, right? Maybe he does in the Olympics and we're back off and running. But man, if he doesn't, I think there's a decision to make here, and probably quickly, because once you, you know, you have to have some value in there to be able to make some kind of move. You know, if you're talking about a trade, his name's popping up in rumors. How far do you let it go before you make that call, you know?
Sure. The other big bit of Blues news this week was defenseman Philip Broberg signed to a 6-year contract extension worth $8 million on average a year. We'll keep him in St. Louis for this year plus another 6, so a long time, you know, through 2032. And one of the biggest items of, you know, the Doug Armstrong, Alexander Steen checklist has now been checked off with signing him to an extension. And, you know, in talking to Doug Armstrong about it, he mentions Broberg's camp wanted a 4-year deal. The Blues would have preferred an 8-year deal. Obviously, that would have kept him in St. Louis a little bit longer. And for Broberg, the 4-year deal would have walked him to UFA, and it would have kept him, it would have allowed him to have another shot at a big deal before he turned 30. So it would have put him on the open market a little earlier then. So both sides had their positions. They met in the middle at 6 years, and it ended up being an $8 million cap hit, which if you look at the Blues historically on defense, they haven't gone past 6.5, really. You look at what Petrangelo was at, what Falk is at, what Pareko's at, what Torrey Krug was at, even when they acquired Cam Fowler. I know there was retained salary by Anaheim. He was at a $6.5 million cap hit that the Blues only have $4 million of. So 6.5 has generally been the threshold for Blues defensemen. And, you know, Doug Armstrong goes out and does $8 million a year for Philip Broberg. And that's a lot due to the cap environment that we're in right now. Right. It's a rising cap. It's going up fast. And that was probably another reason why the player would have preferred a shorter term deal. You know, when the cap's going up this much, you don't want to sign a long-term deal that gets you into something that looks cheap by the end of it. Right. Right. I think we're already looking at Thomas and Kyrie's contracts and saying, you know what, those actually don't look that bad, because you see, you know, some wingers signing for $11-12 million, and Kyrie's at 8, and you see some centers signing for 13-15, and Thomas is at 8. Not saying that they were the same caliber as, you know, Kyle Connor, Mikko Rantanen, and Jack Eichel, but those are the numbers now, and I think we're going to see a similar effect to Philip Broberg later on in this contract.
Yeah, I agree completely with that. I think it may not look like a bargain today, but it will by the end of those 6 years. And, you know, assuming he pans out like they think he's going to pan out, and all signs seem to be pointing to that, you know, he's 24, I think, you know, fits right into that mid-20s core that they've been aiming for. You know, Hofer also in that age range. Then you've got a couple of guys coming up behind that, but locking in those guys, especially like Broberg, you know, is, I don't think he's a number one defenseman today, but I think he's maybe a number two, number three. He's a clear top four defenseman, and you've locked that in for the next 6 years, especially at that age. That's great. It allows some flexibility in roster building kind of down the roster, which seems to be easier to pull off than up the roster.
Sure, some cost certainty, right? Like, you know what right. your big horse costs, and that helps build a team around that. And you know, he's basically been their best defenseman this season. I don't think we have to have – you can have a discussion about maybe Justin Falk and what he's provided offensively.
Yeah, his scoring's been crazy this season, hasn't it?
Right, and what he might provide on the trade market. But Broberg, you know, when they got him from Edmonton – last year, he stepped into a top four role. Like, that was new to him. He had just come from Edmonton, where he was in the AHL. He was up and down. He was sometimes a healthy scratch in the playoffs. He started as a healthy scratch and ended up kind of a third pair guy. So, like, that was his high watermark, was a third pairing guy in the playoffs. He comes into St. Louis, has a top four role immediately, plays really well throughout the entire season. I think he ended up with 29 points.
Yeah, he was great last season. Yeah.
And even this year, it's been a different maturation, stepping in from kind of a second pair role to a top pair role. And more than that, it's taking on tough matchups. It's being the first guy out on the penalty kill, being one of the most trusted defensive players that they have, being able to complement Colton Pareko in that shutdown role, and then ultimately making Team Sweden for the Olympics. So he's got a big step forward, and I think the remaining step that will make this contract a true value would be any sort of offense that he can provide.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds weird, defenseman, offense, but like that's still what they get paid for. If you look at the highest paid defenseman in the league, they get paid for their productivity on the offensive end, for the goals, the assists, the points, all the power play stuff.
You said it yourself. I mean, Falk is scoring like crazy this season, and that's going to help his trade value should the Blues get to that point. Yeah, it's you buy offense.
Yeah, and he wasn't, Broberg wasn't ever going to produce at the same rate as Thomas Harley or Luke Hughes, Jackson Lacombe, some of these other younger defensemen that signed long extensions at heavy cap hits. He wasn't really going to be in that kind of realm. Mm-hmm. But when you look at Keandre Miller in Carolina, what he signed, J.J. Moser in Tampa Bay, what he signed, you know, Broberg kind of fits in that class, and the number kind of reflects that. And, you know, it's funny, even the game before he signed, he got some power play time. And Doug Armstrong mentioned that when he spoke to reporters that, you know what, maybe he gets a little more power play time moving forward. Maybe those numbers start to come on a little bit more. But you need to have a foundation in this league. And his foundation is as a really strong, smooth skating defensive guy that can add offense at times with his skating and his vision. But it's just not quite there yet. And that's something that will be a work in progress, a developmental thing in the NHL that the Blues will look forward to from Broberg, I think.
Yeah, and I think you kind of hit the nail on the head, right? Which, of course, that's your job, you know, as the guy covering the team.
I'm not a carpenter.
But like, yeah, you said you need a foundation, you know, and maybe you are a carpenter, you know, talking about foundations, but, you know, you say you need a foundation. And I think that's true, you know, in terms of just a player, right? But also true in terms of roster construction. And I think having this foundation, you know, for the defenseman is going to make life a little easier for Alexander Steen in the next couple of years as they start to integrate some of that younger talent.
Yeah, because, I mean, if he's a two or three right now, and maybe he can get up to a number one defenseman. It's to me, number one defenseman is a little bit of a misnomer because I do not think that there are 32 number one defensemen.
I agree.
Defensemen right now. There might be 32 defensemen that are the number one on their team. Right. But when you look at number one caliber guys, I mean, there's a few teams that have two of them. Honestly, I think Dallas has two of them with Hastonen and Harley. You know, Colorado, you can make the case that Taves is kind of there, but you know, the Blues for a while have been missing a number one defenseman ever since Pietrangelo left, and they've kind of tried to do it by committee. They've tried to have, you know, a few skills here and a few skills there and kind of complement each other. If Broberg can become an all-around, control the game when he's on the ice, produce offensively, shut down other, you know, other players, other teams' top players, that's a true number one in my eyes, someone you can use in every situation. And if he can do that, that fills a big hole. And maybe Adam Juracek could do that too. Like, I think we'll have to wait and see on him. He's had a great career, a great, great year, had a great World Juniors, but it's a big jump. And especially for a defenseman. So we'll see when he makes that jump and when he's able to contribute in a really big manner. But that's kind of what you're looking at. You're looking at Broberg and Juracek, and if Mayu can become a top four defenseman at some point. Side note, the Blues did sign him to an extension as well. 1 year,
saw that.
$850,000 for next year. So he's locked in through the 26-27 season. But that's kind of the defensive group that they have. In terms of that young core, you know, you could throw in Tucker or Kessel, but they're not all that young. They're not all that core. And so I don't know if they're part of the core.
I like that. Not all that core. That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Carvana's so easy, just a click, and we've got ourselves a car. See?
So many cars. That's a clicktastic inventory.
And check out the financing options. Payments to fit our budget. I mean, that's
Clickonomics 101.
Delivery to our door?
Just a hop, skip, and a click away.
And bought.
No better feeling than when everything just clicks. Buy your car today on Carvana. Delivery fees may apply.
Yeah, they don't call me a wordsmith for nothing. So Broberg, we talked about him being on the Team Sweden. Now that the Olympic rosters have been announced, the Blues will end up with five of them. They have Colton Parayko and Jordan Bennington on Team Canada, Philip Broberg on Team Sweden, Pew Suter on Switzerland, and Dalibor Dvorsky representing Slovakia. It's a group. You know, because some of these countries, they don't have many NHL players, and, you know, they would have had a 6-1 if Alexander Texier was still around. You know, he's right. On the French team, and, you know, Dvorsky, he's in his rookie season. He's played okay. He's got 7 goals this season. Pew Suter, his first season in St. Louis, he's played okay when he's been healthy, you know, responsible defensively, but you wouldn't say that, you know, the Canadian Olympians the Americans, the Swedes, those Olympic teams are kind of built differently than Switzerland, Slovakia, France, etc. So 5 Olympians, congrats to all of them. It'll be fun to watch them play in the tournament and see what they can do on a big stage like that. I think Bennington's going to be the one we all keep an eye on.
I'm so excited, genuinely.
He's the wild card of the group, I would think.
I think he's the wild card of any group. I think he would probably even tell you that, right?
He's the Charlie Day of any group.
Do you think he would like that comparison? I don't like. It's funny. I like it, but
I think he would. So, remember when he got pulled against the Ducks and he had that little exchange with Montgomery? The next day, we're talking to him, and after he's done speaking with reporters, he kind of says to a couple of us, man, what would you guys write about without me?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
You know, and I know you're a big wrestling guy. He enjoys the show. I'm not talking about the big show, but he enjoys just being in the show.
Yeah. That's a wonderful. You have figured out how to make me understand things, Matt. Like, my wife just compares things to pro wrestling or RoboCop, and suddenly I'm able to understand them. This makes sense to me. I like that. That's a great comparison for Jordan Bennington. Yeah,
he loves being part of it all. You know.
Yeah.
Like when, I think that's why he loves playing in Vegas and he loves playing in Montreal. Like those places, you're part of it. You're part of show of it all. You know,
brother, let me tell you about a guy named Shawn Michaels, who they called Mr. WrestleMania because he always showed up on the biggest stage. Jordan Bennington is Shawn Michaels. I figured it out. I love this.
All right. I mean, I'm going to choose to believe you on that one.
I will educate you. After we're done with the podcast, I'll tell you about Shawn Michaels. I'll tell you all about him. Don't you worry.
So, I mean, I do think Bennington is the most interesting blue at the Olympics. Broberg, you know, he's obviously hurt right now. He's in concussion protocol.
Right.
But I, if I'm looking at the Swedish defense, I'm thinking he's going to start as an extra defenseman, as a healthy scratch, and then we'll see what the injuries or the performances look like. So I wouldn't count on him. And this is just me speaking, being in that, you know, game one lineup for Sweden.
Yeah.
Obviously Suter is going to be playing for Switzerland. If he's back, he should be back by then from a right ankle sprain. And Dvorsky will play in for Slovakia. So, you know, some of these guys at the other countries, they're just hoping to make it at least a little bit deep. I don't know how high their expectations are. But Bennington is the one guy that you're like, okay, what's going to happen here?
Yeah, well, you talked about low expectations for some of these other teams. When you talked about Texier earlier saying he's on the French team, like all I could think was, oh, yes, the vaunted French hockey team. Yeah. You know,
well, it's like, you know, and speaking of another contract extension with Texier, he signed a 2-year deal in Montreal worth 2.5 a year. So he's been a fit
for him.
With the Canadians. And Yeah, the French team, they're only in the Olympics because Russia is not.
Yeah, well.
So, yeah. Like, they had their qualifiers last summer, and they didn't qualify, but because the Russians are still not allowed to be in the tournaments, the French have been allowed back in. So, it's he is the only NHL player right now from France. I mean, they have Pierre-Edouard Belmar previously, but current NHLer is Alexander Texier. He's the only Frenchman.
Yeah, and I love the way you just said it so bluntly. Yeah, the French were allowed back in.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's... Yeah,
they opened the door and just let them in. That's pretty good.
I mean, even... I remember talking to Texier during the preseason and talking about like, being named to the Olympic team, and you know, he was even saying, like, you know, our expectation is not to win gold. We know we're not going there to win gold. Yeah. Like, we lost our qualifier last year. So,
yeah.
I think... it'll be a fun experience at the Olympics, but I don't think they have delusion of grandeur. So,
yeah, no, you mentioned Binnington too, and him being the one to watch, and certainly that's true. Not just for you and I as people who cover the team, but fans and others. I mean, I think he's going to be a story to watch. A lot of people are talking about, you know, Sidney Crosby coming back and McDavid finally making his Olympic debut. But yeah, Binnington's the big story for me, at least.
Yeah, at least in St. Louis, I think, right?
Yeah.
And maybe parts of Canada, but.
And like maybe like small, like other teams that might want to trade for Binnington. Maybe they're like, yeah, let's do good. So we, you know, maybe, I don't know. I'm just trying to find more fans out there. That's all. I'm a glass half full guy, Matt.
Sure. And get into the Olympic break. There's 10 games left, 10 games left until the break. And to me, in my mind, there's three checkpoints left in the season. There's February 4th, that's their last game before the break. There's March 6th, that's the trade deadline. And there's April 16th, that's the end of the regular season. So that first checkpoint, the Olympic break, 10 games until then. In my mind, a success at that point is finding some sort of consistency and a positive manner. If you're the Blues team, like if you're the coaching staff and the players and your mindset is to win games and make the playoffs, I'm not so much talking about a big picture look at it where if you're management, you say, well, I don't know, maybe it'd be nice to have a top five pick finally. But right. If you're a coaching staff and a player in these next 10 games, I think you could feel good about yourself at the break if you can find some sort of consistency in the game where you know on a night-to-night basis kind of which team is showing up. And you know, we haven't seen much of that this year, if any. And if there has been consistency, it's been the other way where you see them losing games big consistently. So, you know, Nathan, what kind of looks like success?
You know which team is showing up, but it's the wrong team. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, yeah. Right. So yeah, so in your mind, what's success at the break?
You use the word consistency. I would say structural integrity. Like what we're seeing is like a lot of, there's an initial breakdown and then there are other breakdowns that just cause the wheels to fall off. You know, having that structural integrity within your, you know, the way you play, your actual game plan, and preparation, keeping that together and not, you know, coming apart when things go south. Consistency, but maybe, you know, specific to that direction. That would be what I would like to see. And they've got a, you know, they're only five points out of a wild card spot right now. I don't think they need to be in a playoff spot by the time the break rolls around, but they can't really fall much further as teams start to separate here.
Right. So, yeah, they're 5 points out of a wild card spot. They're 7 points out of last place. So kind of even both ways. And, you know, it's a year where the difference between the first wild card and the second wild card is a massive one.
Yeah.
Whether it is going to Colorado or whether it's playing Vegas or Edmonton, who are very good teams, no doubt, very good teams, but they are not maybe the best team ever.
yeah. We've talked about this. Yeah. Colorado's on a historic heater. Yeah.
And you mentioned structural integrity. Now I got two things that come to mind with structural integrity.
Is it pro wrestling and RoboCop? Because that's the only way I'm going to understand.
No, I mean, that would have been good if I went right into that.
It would have been hilarious. Yeah.
No, I got like skyscrapers.
Okay.
And I got tacos.
Okay. All right.
You know,
that's not the way I expected that to go.
What do you think number two is going to be?
I don't know. When you said skyscrapers, I immediately kind of thought, like, you know, how they're supposed to kind of sway in the wind a little bit, you know, and they have a little bit of give to them.
Yeah.
Whereas, and then you said taco, and I blacked out completely. I didn't even think about the structural integrity of a taco. I was hit with a Dorito Locos taco, and my brain just shut down.
The structural integrity of a taco is very important to the eating experience, in my mind.
Okay. Oh yeah. You know? No, I agree with that.
I'm
a big taco guy, as you can tell.
Hard or soft taco. If you don't have the structural integrity, you either end up with a crumbly mess or a soggy mess.
Yeah.
You have the structural integrity of a good defensive zone coverage, then maybe you get a nice bite with pico in it, you know?
Okay. 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 It turns out it's pro wrestling, RoboCop, and tacos. When you explain things to me in those contexts. I'm good to go. Yeah. No, like a 6-2 loss is like a soggy mess, you know, and then like a 4-0 shutout against, you know, is like a crumbly, you know, oh man, my whole taco fell. Yeah. Yeah. I got it.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
You know, honestly, I feel like that's probably a pretty good place to leave it right there.
Oh yeah. People are going to love that. Just to start talking tacos at the end of a hockey podcast. And also that's a difficult sentence to say.
I'm not even going to try. I'm going to let you simmer in that. So
smart.
All right. That'll do it at the net front. He's Nathan. I'm Matt. We'll see you next week.